103.2 Dublin City FM. Friday, 3 p.m. Gardeners all over the world listening to The Sod Show with Peter Donegan.
It's another Friday afternoon. It is 3 p.m. We are in the company of one of the greats in my company is...
Hi there, I'm Mark Diacono.
Mark, I guess the very easiest way to describe it is in the opposite way around that I normally do, but how would people in Ireland, I guess, best know you?
I guess maybe from River Cottage, where I led the garden team for a few years and I was in the show a bit and wrote a few of their books. And like the mafia, you know, you never quite get away. They pull you back in, so... Even though I'm concentrating on my own thing, which is Otter Farm, where we're building a kitchen garden school and so on, I'm still connected to there. I'm one of the authors of their next book, which is an A to Z Bible of ingredients. So maybe through that, I guess, and my involvement with GIY as well.
That would be GIY International, formerly GIY Ireland, or both still the same person. There are wailing children in the background, but that's ambient Irish sounds for those listening across in the States. They've got red hair and freckles as far as you're concerned in audio. To bring it back, Mark, and this is Sod Show Bingo for those who would be aware, I used to have a grifter, I know. And pocket money was saved. I'd put compost on the handlebars. Plants were growing under the bed. Fast track forward to Horticultural College, out the far side, making gardens, and somewhere along the side with Brian Green. Sod Show was done. You, on the other hand, decided, Mom, I want to work in a television program type thing. Fill in the blanks for me.
I'm relatively unemployable, I think, is about the accurate thing. I've done a selection of jobs, most of which I was no good at or didn't enjoy. And then I found one which I quite enjoyed, which was advising people about managing the countryside, but on a kind of county and national level. And then I met my wife, who became my wife, she was really into gardening. I picked it up off her maybe 15 years ago, thinking, well, I'd better do something in the garden, otherwise I'll never see her. I'm a bloke. I planted some spuds, and they grew, and they were great. And then I guess I just got the bug, you know, and started growing some stuff. I met Hugh Fernley Whittingstall, who was very early on in the River Cottage days, you know, back in Series One. Got slightly involved there, kept doing courses, running courses for them, became the person leading the garden team. So it's all kind of a happy accident, I reckon. Happy accident.
We were talking with Karen from GIY, and she was saying that when she first left school, she kind of didn't know what she wanted to do. On one hand, it was medicine; the other hand, it was law. Never really worked out, kind of thing. From a personal perspective, in her heart, I guess, and in her head. And then the question was, how did you, I guess, end up working for GIY? And is it all of those things? What was you when you first left school? Were you a car mechanic? Were you a solicitor? A barrister?
I left school at 15. I wasn't quite 16. Did a dreadful job in an office in the county hall, which is, you know, in Devon, and really didn't enjoy it. So I went back to school, and really all I wanted to do was be lazy. So for about 7 or 8 years, I became very good at pool, quite good at drinking, relatively good at playing a selection of relatively bad at playing a selection of musical instruments. And then I kind of woke up and went to college late. And so I didn't, again, like I say, I'm relatively unemployable. I'm not too good at very many things. So it was quite nice to happen upon something that I was all right at in the end.
But I find, and again, it's the, you know, it's that whole cliche thing of, you know, when I've had a shiny thing up on the shelf and that photograph is taken and people look at the garden, be it show gardens or whatever, and they will, you know, oh, must be great to sit down and draw gardens for a living. And I'm kind of going, well, my accountant might disagree with you. My you know, my bank manager will definitely disagree with you. It is great to sit down and draw gardens, but it's better if I do it in my sleep and pretend that I'm doing it. In the real world, everything changes. For you, there's, I guess there's maybe from the outside looking in through the glass shop front window, a lot of people will turn around and go, oh my God, you worked on this television thing and you were the name that we associate. You've done the books and behind it. I'm kind of going, well, you know, is it that glorious? Is it that good? Are you living the dream? Are you rock and roll? Are you Jimmy Page and Robert Plant? Or is it no? Listen, I'm still, you know, yeah, no.
I reckon that, I mean, the funny, I mean, the difficult thing is you always take yourself with you. So, you know, it's very easy to put down all the things in your life as being circumstance and stuff. And, you know, you take yourself with you with all your limitations and all your pain and the arsedness. But it's the only, I reckon it's the only thing that I felt content doing. And when I started doing it, I promised myself I wouldn't pretend that I was good at it. And you know what? Once you reach a certain age, you realise that actually there's very few experts out there. It's mostly people with a little bit of knowledge and a bit of experience making it up as they go along. Do you know? And once you've reached that point and you stop bullshitting everybody that you're the king of the hill, it's all right, you can relax, and it's actually good fun. And I think that's it. I think that's why I like this so much, is that I know some stuff, I've been doing some stuff a while, but you don't have to flannel it, you know. It's just
okay. Let's break this down, Bobby Brown, because I'm still stuck on this one. You planted a few spuds out of back garden to impress your good lady.
Yep.
Fine, they grew, that worked, you're a freaking genius. Right. At that time, were you working, and I mean earning money as a gardener?
No. I was doing this consultancy, you know, advising about managing landscapes on big scale. So absolutely not. And then if you want to earn a living at gardening, you've either got to be a better gardener than me, you know, someone like Dermot, who's growing for GIY, you know.
Dermot.
Someone who's got real skill and lots of experience and can kind of, you know, really do it. And I'm okay, but he's, you know, on a different level.
Or me. You can say that bit and we'll edit it out.
Okay. Or me.
Or you.
Or you.
Or me. Okay. Can we try that again?
Let's try that again. Or you.
Oh, me?
Yeah. Oh, thanks. You heard about me over it.
If anybody mentions gardens, that's it. They're like,
Peter,
you know.
Donegan,
he's
the man. Have you
seen him? Yeah. Do I know him?
What do you mean? Do you know him?
Know,
of course.
That's what I get.
All the time.
Women come up to me and they're going, I'm not being funny. Is there any way you can introduce me? Just make that connection.
I get that all the time, man. It's like being one of the beaches. I just honestly,
it's the way it is, and you know, I think I've got real friends, but I know what they're really after.
You've got me, brother. I'll stand by your side.
You're a good man.
I try.
Back to serious matters, we leave the Peter Griffin stuff to one side for a minute. But I mean, when did you first start to make a living from growing potatoes in your back garden?
From after that, it was growing unusual things. If you've got to grow something that nobody else grows, if you want to make a living, if you're not amazing, you've got to do it growing things nobody else does. So I grow things like Szechuan pepper, kiwis, you know, pecans, unusual stuff. You ain't going to get it unless you get it from me, if you want it from this part of the world. So that's the way to do it if you want to earn money growing stuff. Otherwise, it's down the avenues of it. You know, if you're brilliant at what you do, people would like to know how to be better if they want to get to your level. So write about it, tell them about it, talk to them about it, help them get from A to B, and I think that's a good place to go.
So the River Cottage Farm come up to you and say, hey, listen, we heard about you. Never mind the Peter Donegan jokes for the minute, but like, we heard about you and we want you to come over to our side. Is that what happened?
Yeah, well, I tell you what happened. I went fishing with Hugh. And I spent most of the day with my head over the side of the boat being sick, laying down the bait for all the fish they caught. And then we went out a few scoops afterwards, hit it off, and became... Yeah, it's kind of that. You know, you're growing apricots. We'll come and do a bit of that and see what you're up to. And then kind of got dragged into it. So it was...
But you didn't go fishing because, oh my God, that's Hugh Fearnley. You just went fishing because he was a mate?
Yeah, it was way back in the days when hardly anybody knew who he was. And, you know, he's just a lovely guy. And... he lived around the corner. I because of the work I was doing, you know, advising about managing the countryside and kind of landscape planning, they wanted a bit of a help with that on the whole issue of where they were going to put the farm, where they were going to set a River Cottage as a base and an HQ. So I kind of got involved with that. I was doing their website a bit, and you know.
Okay. Well, for the listeners of that's that part clarified and out of the way. You're now standing on your own two feet. You've got it under your own name. The first book is what, and how did that come about?
Well, I've written four for River Cottage, News Track, and then I wrote A Year at Otter Farm, which is really following what I do at Otter Farm, which is my place. So through the seasons, but also kind of through the years as well. So it's a kind of plot to plate, you know, growing and cooking. All the stuff, from the best of the familiar like asparagus and all that stuff, to more unusual things like I don't know, like chili and guava and that kind of stuff. Not a lot of people go that are, you know, that are really delicious, really amazing stuff. Plot to plate, and it's, you know, it's hopefully entertaining. And then recently I've written one called The New Kitchen Garden, which is I guess I got fed up with seeing so many books assuming that everybody wanted to dedicate their life to growing a bit of food, whereas, you know, if you actually nose around and seeing what lots of different people do, they do it in so many different ways, so many fascinating ways. Tiny scale, big scale, rooftops, all kinds of growing, permaculture, you know, no dig, all of this stuff. So I wanted to kind of write an encyclopedia of all the different ways of doing it and all the different foods rather than just the usual suspects, and kind of whack it all together in a big Bible. And yeah, I think we did an okay job.
What's your own place like at this moment in time? Do people come visit it? Do are there queues at the door? Do they want your autograph? Is it the older generation of Horts that kind of, oh my God, look at your man, I want to sing Beatles songs to him, or is it the nouveau to the grow it yourself kind of groove? Or have you found I guess in the sincerest way of asking, have you found a swift change because of how the growing it yourself movement has come along?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's an interesting time for me because I've been there a few years now, and we've got no way of welcoming people. So we're literally this week just starting the build on a kitchen garden school. So throwing up a lovely building that we can have people in and we can do courses. Not just me, but I want other people coming and doing courses and festivals and all that kind of stuff. So I want it to be a big kind of collaborative thing. But it's interesting, this whole movement, this DIY movement, this whole kind of thing for growing your own food, because on one end you've got all the old duffers who've been doing it forever, you know, with their flat hats and all of the cliched nonsense, who know way more than many of us do because most of it's experience. And they're looking for interesting new things to do and interesting new things to grow. So they are interested in the Chilean guavas and the Sichuan peppers because that gives them something else to work their brilliance and expertise on. But you've also got all the young folk coming through who are fascinated by the whole thing. You've got people who are into it kind of politically, you know, about a whole food system and the whole way that we kind of reorganize how, not only how we feed ourselves, but how we feed the next generation. So I think it's a big thing, and it's also coming from people who are more into food, because in England certainly food is a bigger thing than growing, but often that's the gateway, you know, food is the gateway drug to growing. So, you know.
Okay, pop quiz round. The last piece of vinyl that you bought, because you strike me as a hipster.
Oh, last piece of vinyl I bought was it was the last Kendrick Lamar album, of all things. A mate who's very very into his hip hop got me into the Kendrick Lamar, which I don't mind at all. Yeah.
Your favourite tipple on the weekend or scoop?
Would be a Lagavulin. I do like a Lagavulin whiskey. Yeah.
Wowee, okay, we're going places with this. The last thing that you grew that you kind of turned around and went, why did I spend, Jesus, I wasted my money on that.
Yeah, celery. It's always celery. I absolutely hate celery. Celery is like the devil's arse. It's just, it's the worst of all things. And usually celery, it's eaten with cottage cheese, which we all know is liquid polystyrene. You know, it's awful. Worst thing. And I've got this thing, I always want to try and, if I dislike something quite strongly, usually about 10 years later, I find I love it. I did it with Van Morrison. You know, when I was 16 at school, I'm going, Van Morrison or Jim Morrison? Well, it's Jim Morrison. I'm 16. I'm at school. And I couldn't imagine a world in which Van Morrison was better than Jim Morrison. And now I'm like, I like you start Jim Morrison? Come on. So, you know, I'm worried because I think I'm going to get there with celery. But I try it every few years and it's the worst of all things.
What's the one thing that you pick up on you pick up a garden book, you're in a library and you kind of turn around and go, quack peddler? That's the same thing. I read that in the last book that you wrote 40 years ago. It's the same shit, different day here. What was that?
I couldn't possibly say.
Do you watch gardening, let's say, in the media, just to put a carte blanche across the whole lot of it? Do you watch gardening in the media and go, how could anybody be inspired by this shit?
Yeah, sometimes. I think that there's a dreariness put to it. There's a kind of hard-working weariness, and you know, and that whole thing, it needs the exciting side, it needs the flavour, it needs the oomph. You know, it's still got that thing. No matter how many people seem to kind of go against it, there is still an undercurrent of it being about subsistence and about hard work and about kind of, you know, struggle and put in, dedicate all your weekends and evenings, and at the end of it you'll have 2 tons of onions and 2 tons of spuds, all the heavy stuff that costs nothing in the shops, rather than growing flavour and loveliness and things that make you look forward to it, and things that make you at the end of when you're harvesting it going, geez, that asparagus, that purple sprouting broccoli, that lemon verbena, whatever it is, it changes how I feel about eating, you know what I mean?
you've got quite a good sense of dressing, if you don't mind me saying. The real super dry company shirt pretty much does it for me, but your jeans are turned up slightly at the bottom, so I'm on the balancing bridge here. Yeah, I'm unsure about you, you know. But it's okay. You pay me a compliment at the start. We can live with it.
What about these boys? I mean, these are it over there. I don't know. They'll reach here in 10 years. Yeah,
they probably. Yeah, I'm a little bit behind. I take a size 13 shoe. We're on different wavelengths.
13,
I
got to.
I'm looking to find shoes to fit me at all. But you know, and we've had this conversation before with other younger. I say younger in the heart, younger in the head, younger by age. It doesn't really matter. But that kind of gardener that doesn't wear the cricket hat judges-esque uniform and blend in and fit into that genre stereotype. And I guess I've had the heckles where I felt like I didn't fit in, and I probably always will. There's a Blues Brothers Elwood joke in there somewhere. But do you find that people will come up to you nearly and say, can you tell me where the gardener is? And also a subsection of that question is, do you hate the word gardener?
Gardeners, ooh, that's a good couple of ones. I reckon, people still see it as the kind of, you know, so you didn't pay attention at school job, you know, which is ridiculous, you know. And you do get a bit of that, but I think it's changing. I hope it's changing. Maybe I'm optimistic. There's enough people out there who are crossing that thing, not only of being good at what they do, but they're communicating about it. And if you're doing that well, and if you're crap at it, and you force yourself to get better at it, I think that's the thing. You know, it is an involved thing, and it does take skill, and it takes involvement, and it takes sort of intellectual capacity and all of that stuff. So yes, I think you're right, you do still get a lot of that, but I don't think it's particularly true.
Did your good lady at any point turn around along this journey and go, what, I'm to blame for making, you can't blame this one on me, I know it's come good, you might say the journey now, and I'm extremely proud of you, but I know in my own life there was, you know, a couple who would have turned around and went, God, he can't believe he went and studied, he's going to set up his own business. Did you have those moments where you kind of went, I've got to leave this church, just I'm out of here, man?
Totally. No, when we moved where we are now, and we got a house with a bit of land out the back, and we got this whacking great mortgage, and you know, my wife's going, what we've just got this enormous mortgage, and you're turning from a job that pays you okay into doing something that it seems is just a what are we doing? What are you doing? What are you going to do with this 16 acres, 17 acres at the back? And all I could say was mulberries, which ain't much of an answer. But I said, you know, we've got to grow mulberries. I had some the other day. They were amazing. I've never eaten anything like it. And I still haven't eaten anything as amazing as them. And that's, you know what? She kind of let that be enough of an answer, which is kind of lovely, isn't it? You know, and that's what you need. You need someone to go, well, he looks enthusiastic, or she looks, you know, like they're on fire about it. Let's give him a bit of rope. And she gave me a bit of rope.
Yes. Wow. Nice to have that behind you. In a sense, I guess, do you get up in the morning now, look in the mirror and go, Jesus, I'm lucky I'm me? when you break it down, you know, if the TV thing has been done, it was maybe, I guess, by you know, with involvement of others that the books were done, but you kind of have your own bit of a stamp on it. And when we did our research, I guess pre coming up to Waterford to meet, you know, your name very much jumped off the page, and people were kind of saying the thing that I get in Dublin, you know, there's your man Donegan, go up and ask him. All right, but you've got it under your own name. So do you get up in the morning and go, Jesus, you're a good looking man, and your reflection goes, I know, dude, I know. Is it that?
That's exactly how it is every morning. I was, yeah. No, I'm. You know, I reckon. I feel lucky. I feel lucky. But I do. I feel lucky. You don't happen upon something that you love all the time. But I do think you have to just go, I'll give it a go. And if it don't work, you can go and do something else. Go and do something you hate. But don't do that first. Don't do something you hate first. That's all.
is it a case, and you touched on it briefly earlier on, and you mentioned the word, not I, but you, that lazy, and I guess lazy to me was doing something that my dad made me do. It was, you know, that I didn't want to do. Yeah. It was, for me, it would have been anything internal, which was usually polishing or fouling or ironing.
Yeah.
Garden for me was always the great escape, and I was happiest in my own little James and the Giant Peach in my head, just plodding along.
Yeah.
It, as that kind of, what my mum would have said was lazy to internal work, has that kind of changed in you now, because you will happily go out and pick mulberries for 14 hours and not even notice, shit, it's Tuesday.
Yeah, no, that's totally it, you know, and it's interesting. It was one of the things, I think, that stopped it. It wasn't that I was lazy, it's just I was uninspired. You know, I was uninspired.
What's the next steps for you?
Next step, the big thing is this kitchen garden school. I've got to raise some money. I've got to, although I'm getting underway, even though we haven't got all the money. We've got some of the money. We need to raise some more money. I've got to build a nice team around me, because I don't want it to just be me. So we're also going to get a still in. So we're going to be doing some distilling. We're going to be making our own wine. We're going to be doing some distilling. We're going to be running lots of courses, having a nice festival or two, and keeping on involvement with GRY in Ireland, as well as doing stuff in England. That's the big thing.
If people want to get in touch, to want to find out more, how do they do that? Are you on the Twitter, on the web,
or
are you?
I'm on Twitter, which is at Mark Diacono, which is Diacono, otterfarm.co.uk, which is our the place that we come from, and it's got the shop and it's got everything we do. It's got the blog, email contacts on there, and on Facebook, which is just Otter Farm too.
So Mary McGinnity, who's our stereotypical mom, and Michael, who's her husband, they live in Cork somewhere, or Shire in England, as our own Dylan Moran would say. They want to get in touch, they want to head across and do a course in gardening. Can they stay the weekend? Will they be able to? How much is it going to set them back approximately?
Well, we're going to start in hopefully in June. Assuming we have an okay winter and we can get the build done okay, we're going to start courses in June. We won't be able to stay actually at our place, but there's two great places to stay, you know, within walking distance from us, which is really great. Courses, they will cost you. What we're going to do, and one of the things that's very important to me, is that we do things based on what people can pay. So there's going to be a rate for a course, which we haven't set yet, but there'll be that rate for the course, and that's the minimum rate you pay. If you can afford to pay more, we'll give people the opportunity to pay more, and we'll match that. So if somebody pays £20, €20 more, we'll match that with another £20, and we can then make it available to people who are less ability to pay to come along to the courses. And we've done that with my last book, is we made sure that selling it through our website, we made no money on it, and I want to do that with everything. So we made it available at cost price, so you could buy it absolutely for cost price, and I'd send it to you. If you paid too much, I'd make it available to other people for nothing or a reduced price. And all but 7 people out of a few hundred bought the book at the higher price. And it's been amazing. So we get emails through from people going, my mum's ill with dementia. She used to garden, but now, you know, she doesn't know what to do, but I know it's in there. I'm no gardener. Send me your book, because then I know what to do and I can work with her. And then you get an email back 4 months later going, I've had the best summer of my life with my mum, learning how, you know, it's lovely. And that's the power of the bloody thing. So that's why we want to make it open to people. Even if they can't afford it, we'll find a way to let them in and let other people be part of that.
Mark Diacono, thank you so very much for coming on the Sideshow. It's been a real genuine pleasure.
Oh, it's been a total pleasure for me too. Thanks very much.
Cheers, sir.
Cheers, thank you.
That was good. And that was, of course, the wonderful Mark Diacono of Otter Farm over the pond, not too far away. Fingers crossed we'll have him back on the show soon enough. Our thanks, however, need to go to the crew, the wonderful team at GIY Ireland and GIY International. That's Shona and Karen and Dermot and Ronan and Mick, who helped us in the coffee department and water departments, as well as actually getting us down there and putting us in touch with Mark. A real genuine pleasure, and sincere from the heart thanks on that one, lads. If you need to get in touch with us, if you're walking, driving, and I don't know, you need some details from this or any of the other shows, at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSideshow, or you can head to iTunes or sideshow.com if you're a little bit on the carrier pigeon still, which is absolutely grand, and you'll get the back catalogue of almost 5 years of shows just there for me and on behalf of myself and Brian Green. Thank you so much for tuning in. Been real, from the heart, pleasure to you too. Thank you. Slán. Bye.